Hi, I'm Liam O'Rourke. I'm rooting for Ishii and Nakamura in the G1 Climax, I won't miss Power Slam Magazine, and unlike some geniuses in the wrestling business, I always double-check where I'm sending my emails.
I'm Carl Jones, and I scripted Ahmed Johnson's promos, I was one half of the tag team The Ding Dongs, and I'm the person responsible for the note that was sent to Booker T back in 2003.
Hi, I'm G. John Chase, and I think I can finally answer the question of whether China is a man or a woman. I've done some research on the internet, and I can safely say she was born a hermaphrodite.
I'm Luke Edwards, and I would like to take back every single word I said. Put it down. About Mr. Ronnie Garvin from the previous podcast. He's a wonderful man, a glorious, handsome. Oh God, he's coming! He's coming!
This is the panel for the 8th Squared Circle Gazette Radio, and you can hear us talk about who and what is overrated in professional wrestling next. Hello everyone and welcome to the 8th episode of Squared Circle Gazette Radio. I am Liam O'Rourke along with my co-host G. John Chase.
She's still here.
Carl Jones.
I'm slowly going bald.
And Luke Edwards.
Turns out we're funny this time.
Well, hopefully so, because we are today, instead of analysing the underrated like we did last week, we're going to be talking about the overrated. We're going to be looking at the guys who are given a little bit too much play in the general opinion of the masses. Now, at the end of last week's episode, you may recall we did the underrated, and Matt D from Pro Wrestling Only for his underrated suggested Sting. We carried that over to this week, because for the overrated, Carl Jones wants to tackle Sting, in his opinion, as overrated rather than underrated. Now, this is one that we're going to have a little bit of a debate on, so Carl, what are your thoughts on Sting?
Such is my opinion on this one, I actually bothered to do some research. That's right, folks. I took the time and effort, whilst being at my day job, to look up numbers on the internet. Now, I know a lot of people are probably going to jump down my throat here with Starrcade 97. Look at the buy rate. It was fantastic. Excellent buy rate. Not going to argue that at all. But let's dispense with the myth that Sting was a draw. He wasn't. Ric Flair can say he was our ultimate warrior, but he was 10 times better. Well, that may be Flair's opinion. You know what? Warrior was a more consistent draw than Sting. Great American Bash 90, Flair versus Sting, 1.5. Lower than the previous year's 1.7, which was Funk Flair. Halloween Havoc, where he's the champion in 1990.
Defending against Sid.
1.3. Previous year, 1.7. Super Brawl 2, his feud with Luger did a 0.96. The previous year, which was Flair against Tatsumi Fujinami, 1.04. Ric Flair drew a bigger buy rate against a man that no one in North America had heard of.
No, they did a terrible job building up Fujinami.
Okay, and just as a little caveat to this one, Fall Brawl 99. Now, 99 wasn't a good year for WCW, don't get me wrong. But Fall Brawl did a 0.35, which is the second lowest buy rate for the history of that pay-per-view. So we'll dispense with the myth that Sting was a draw. I think I've succinctly done that. And let's get on to his in-ring work. He had a great match with Flair every now and then.
Yeah, who didn't
have a great match with Flair during that period? Flair had great matches with everyone during that period. Okay. Maybe I'm glossing a little bit. I can see
the JYDs and the El Gigantes.
Okay, there are notable exceptions, but generally speaking, Flair didn't have bad matches, did he? As a rule of thumb.
Okay with that.
Look at his work from the end of 97 onwards. Where are those great Sting matches? I mean, by the time you've got to late 99, 2000, he's nothing more than coming in the ring, hollering, beating his chest, 3 to 9 Stinger splashes, the Scorpion Death Drop, and maybe the Scorpion Death Lock. That's Sting. Sting to me was smoke and mirrors.
Okay, I appreciate your knock on Sting post 97. What do you think of him as a worker before that?
I think he was okay. I don't think he was any more than that, really.
Do you not think that he was the best opponent for Vader ever?
It probably looks more favourable because Hogan ran over Vader, so it was better in that sense.
But in terms of match chemistry with Vader,
I think Foley's matches with Vader were better. I just think as a body of work, Sting hasn't got a litany of great matches to point to.
Okay.
Now, Chase has sat there open mouthed for the better part of the last 6 to 7 minutes, so come on.
I will say, very quickly, Gian Chase, I will say, Sting, this is a big debate every year in October when the Wrestling Observer Hall of Fame comes out, because Sting's not in the Hall of Fame, and there's a lot of people that think he should be in, and a lot of people that don't. So Sting's one of the more hotly debated guys on this overrated, underrated fence.
Okay, there's some, you know, interesting numbers there. And yeah,
factual numbers, not interesting.
I'm sure they're absolutely factual from the internet. But it's just
look them up. You don't believe me.
But it's just for me. I think a few of those numbers that you're picking were during time periods where the company wasn't doing too good anyway. To the point where I think like not even Sting was going to help him out. I mean, particularly that Fall Brawl 99. I think that was definitely the decline of WCW by then. So I think, you know, nothing was going to help that out.
Okay, the previous month's numbers were around the 0.5 range, and there is a noticeable drop off of that Fall Brawl number.
Okay. For those numbers, like in terms of ring work, when you were saying about like he hasn't got a good enough body of work, I completely disagree. We mentioned enough names there, but you know, his matches that he had with Ric Flair, the match that he had with Cactus Jack, with Vader, with DDP. He had, I remember him having a good match with Goldberg. You know, yeah, okay, people will mention Starrcade 97, and you know, because it, you know, had a good build. You know, the match wasn't the greatest thing, but you know, neither was Rock Hogan either. But everybody remembers that match.
Rock Hogan was significantly.
But Rock Hogan in itself wasn't like the most amazing match. It was quite basic, but everyone holds it in such a high regard, and I think that's what they do with Sting Hogan because of the time period and with the build.
I will respectfully disagree in the sense that I think that Starrcade 97, the execution of that entire show, is one of the biggest bullets in WCW history. I think that Rock and Hogan, even though, like you said, as a work rate kind of match, it's what are you going to say about it? However, it was the perfect match for that crowd. Contrast to Sting and Hogan, which was absolutely not the perfect match for that crowd, where Hogan kicks his ass the entire time, pins him with the supposed fast count. Yeah. The coldest babyface payoff victory, one of the coldest I think I've ever seen, and one of the worst executed ones.
Well, yeah, but I don't think that's necessarily Sting's fault.
Hold on.
It was politics by Hogan.
It was politics by Hogan, but just if I can just make a quick point there. I didn't actually mention the Starrcade 97 match and hold it against him. I merely used it as a reference point for buy rates to further my other points. I didn't hold Starrcade 97 against him.
The comments about, you know, like you're looking at 99-2000, I think are fair enough, where he didn't really have many great matches or at all. Yeah, but then again, how many great matches were there in 2000 in WCW?
Yeah, but we to use DDP as an early point, we made the reference that the effort was there. Wasn't there with Sting? Sting was phoning it in for 18 months to 2 years.
I mean, Sting in 99 had good matches with DDP. That's when he faced DDP, wasn't it?
Yeah, there were a couple of matches on Nitro that were pretty good.
Probably from Sting's perspective, if you were working in that company the way it was being handled at that time, would you have much motivation?
Yeah, but let's put this into some perspective. Sting is held up by several people as a top guy, one of the top guys, and I don't think that's right. I just don't think that's right.
The big argument against Sting, when Meltzer gives his analysis about whether or not he should go in the Hall of Fame, is that he was the designated top guy for a company that didn't really work, and he's got one great buy rate to his name. And even though he's iconic, other than that one great buy rate, there really isn't that much to point to. And in terms of body of work, how does he compare to other elite Hall of Fame guys in that respect? He's obviously comes up a little bit short because he doesn't have the consistency there. If he doesn't compare well as a draw or as a worker to the guys who are currently Hall of Fame level, that's where the debate comes. He didn't have the best buy rate in WCW history, and he was an established top star for a long time.
So, hold on a sec. Sorry, just going back a bit. So you think his body of work isn't as good as, say, Hogan or Ultimate Warriors?
Hogan has the buy rate
from a match working way.
Hogan has the better buy rate. Warrior was a bigger draw.
But from working a match, though, you're saying Sting doesn't have as good matches.
Yeah, but I've said there's two criteria, I don't think Sting measures up in either.
The difference between Sting and Hogan in the ring is what it is. The difference between Hogan and Sting as draws and historical significance is night and day.
I'll concede the fact with the figures that you've dealt out, and the fact that there obviously are bigger stars than him, and there were probably like bigger stars in WCW like Ric Flair and so on that drew higher than him, but At no point do I think he's overrated. I think you know he's held it as one of the key guys in WCW because he was a WCW elite like Ric Flair, Goldberg, DDP, and so on. And I think he deserves that. Like, you know, he was there. He was always in the top spot. I think he did perform to a high level for the majority of those years. And I don't think he's underrated like the one chap who you're reading out. Matt D. I don't think he was underrated, and I also don't think he's overrated. I think he's right exactly where
properly
he is.
Rated.
Yeah, properly rated. Everyone remembers him as being a legend of WCW.
You know, I've kept quiet on this because I'm kind of divided, and I think what sticks in my throat a little bit is a phrase Carl used, which was that it's all smoke and mirrors, and you know, I don't think there's anything wrong with that to some extent. And I think that's just part of what wrestling is
for sure
to me. And I think it's something we spoke about to extents when we were talking about the video, we were talking about Foley. There are elements of that creeping through at every angle. And there are certainly other people who are remembered very fondly in wrestling who are smoke and mirrors in many ways. It's tricky, because the more I sit back and think about the actual body of work and those things, that maybe I have been overrating Sting. Maybe that's a really good case. It's really hard to say, because I think at the end of the day, on some level mentally, I rate the icon of Sting differently from the man, and it's a really strange thing to put, but I can separate them in my head, which is a really stupid and weird thing to do. No, it's weird and stupid, and it's almost like the two phases of Sting, as it were, the two generations of Sting.
Yeah.
maybe that's it. I don't know. I think that's a really tricky one. I might be leaning towards siding with Carl on this one.
Alright, now with that said, we got a lot of feedback to get to, just like last week. A lot of people with their takes on who they think is overrated. And again, this isn't just anybody, this can be an event, it can be an angle, it can be a promo, whatever. Glenn Stewart said, his overrated, Jake the Snake Roberts. I don't believe him to be near the all-time greats in terms of promos, and his in-ring gets pumped up with some phantom psychology when his matches weren't spectacular. Not discrediting him, he's just not at the level that people think he is.
I would have been interested there if he'd said what he believes people think is the level for Jake.
I think all-time greats is what he's saying.
I can understand why someone would make the points about Jake's matches. Some of them weren't great. He was very economical in the ring, I think it's fair to say. But his promo work is outstanding. He is definitely one of the best promos of the 80s, early 90s, depending on how far you want to go into that decade. Just look back at some of his heel promos when he turns on the Warrior. That's the stuff of legend to me. And I'm not someone who goes for the catchphrases, so I really like someone whose promos are varied. And it was a time where in WWF you've got everyone who's shouting, everyone who's hollering, they're all cartoon characters, and then you've got Jake. He sticks out like a sore thumb in the WWF in his promo work.
You just have to look at Tuesday in Texas, and as you mentioned, Liam,
the Savage
feud, right? That moment where he pulls out the snake and attacks Savage, right? And it actually bites him, okay? And just how demonic he looked, and then like also like slapping Elizabeth in the face, and he does that promo afterwards.
He should have to pay for that.
He basically says better than orgasm.
He goes,
great.
Oh my god, that was a better orgasm. I should have to pay for that. I would pay for that. And then at the end he just says, Savage, I know you want to get that revenge back on me, but just do me one favor, just one small favor. Please bring her with you. Please.
Mean Gene is incredulous.
Yeah. Oh, he's just going, he goes, you're a real piece of work, you know that?
Get the hell out of here, yeah, Roberts.
This is the worst reconstruction for doing
I never thought when I said, okay, let's make a podcast, that I'd end up doing Gene Okerlund impressions.
But I think, going back to the first podcast, I think we generally agreed on Jake. He was the guy to get guys ready for Hogan.
Now, he did draw well in Mexico as a heel. I will throw that in there as an addendum.
But I think Jake falls into that category of I don't think he's overrated. I don't think he's underrated. I think he's held in the stature he should be.
Yeah, I do think though, perhaps so. Although I think when you look at it, and a lot of the way people judge people big picture wise, when they think underrated, overrated, their mind immediately goes to the big matches. And in Jake's case, the big matches, his WrestleMania run is pretty fuck awful, if you can be quite honest. Three, he has the match with Honky, which is, you know, trying to follow on after Savage and Steamboat, bless him, that's just not going to happen. Four, he has that really boring 15-minute draw with Rude. WrestleMania 5 with Andre is not up to much. You know, 6 with DiBiase is a massive disappointment. The blindfold match at 7 is much maligned. I know that people have different opinions on it.
I like it.
That's where I think this opinion comes from. Yeah, not to put words in his mouth.
Yeah, but also, I mean, when you look at those WrestleMania matches and, like, how he was booked, I mean, like, how many of those matches at WrestleMania did he actually win? How many of them were, like, either count-outs or DQ finishes? How many times was he screwed over at WrestleMania?
Lots
and
of
he never
booking.
Got that big win.
Lots of gutless booking in the WWF at those WrestleManias. Moving right along, Rick Morris is in with his overrated pre-expansion era WWF. I never saw enough of this to form an opinion prior to the WWE Network coming online, but watching those house shows from the 1970s and the early 1980s is just brutal. Punch and kick, with even the allegedly scientific Bob Backlund working matches more primitive than I'd have thought. And the crowds were eating it up! Truly unbelievable when a body slam is the height of your high spots, but these matches uniformly stunk.
Those punches and kicks, the only thing I'll point out is those guys were able to get people to their feet just using punches and kicks. How many people today could you say could do the same thing?
And in many ways as well, it's kind of the opposite of some of the things we spoke about last, but it's the anti-Garvin. I think it is idolized. It is held in esteem. It is mythologized. But when you actually get to look at it, well, of course, they're only human, okay? And that's how it's going to be. And so I believe it's one of the easiest things to overrate.
I'd agree with that. And I think that the Bob Backlund reference there is quite good, because Bob Backlund, scientific wrestler, was a fantastic creation of Vince Sr. And Bob Backlund, look at his matches, when you look at, you know, he doesn't have that many great ones to his name, I don't feel, personally.
I don't think Bob Backlund's held in quite as high a regard as, say, you know, San Martino or anyone like that. I think
San Martino and Bob Backlund.
San Martino was no great shakes in the ring either, if you want to look at ring work. But again, for both these guys, in the style they were in the territory they were in, this did work. They did draw big money.
Well, yeah, I mean, San Martino straight away, because just due to the location where they were, San Martino drew really well straight away. I think, though, if I remember right, Backlund wasn't an immediate hit. I think it took a little while for the general crowd, to warm up to him.
Jerry Von Kramer from Pro Wrestling Only. My overrated, by a long shot, is post-comeback Shawn Michaels. I really don't like his big showcase WrestleMania matches, or the era of endless false finishes and near falls they help to inculcate. People go on about Taker and HBK. I am not at all a fan of those matches, and they represent everything I've come to dislike about WWE main event style. A post from Pro Wrestling Only, LP, has a great phrase, the self-conscious epic. And nothing to me represents that idea more than Taker versus HBK, or indeed Shawn Michaels as a babyface in general in the 21st century. I might be a voice of one in a sea of thousands, but there is no way that the Taker matches are 5 stars.
Ladies and gentlemen, settle in. This one's going to be a long one.
Okay, I love Jerry Von Kramer's podcast, Where the Big Boys Play. He has offered some very, very much appreciated advice about this podcast. With that said, I could not disagree anymore about Shawn Michaels. I am the biggest Shawn Michaels fan in the world. I think everybody's probably...
I don't know, I think Shawn Michaels may be the biggest Shawn Michaels fan in the world.
Who knows? I'm curious, because the thing is, if I just kind of say I think he's great, I don't think that's going to make for great radio. So I want to hear what you guys think as well. In addition to what Jerry Von Kramer said, and he said he thinks he might be the voice of one in thousands, admittedly. What do you guys think? Shawn Michaels post-injury?
First off, he mentions, what's that terminology?
The self-conscious epic.
Self-conscious epic. Mm. I mean, he says that in such a kind of detrimental way. Like, oh, how dare he try and, you know, have the best match on the card? Before, everyone should be aiming to have the best match on the card, particularly at WrestleMania as well. You mentioned it a while ago, like my favourite wrestler, Macho Man Randy Savage, you mentioned that he was like the original Mr. WrestleMania before he came along. Macho Man was another guy who just, like, every time he went out there, was the self-conscious epic. You know, he always tried to have the best matches ever. So I don't quite like that phrase, to be honest. But in terms of referencing his later run, I'm actually going to switch it. I'm not actually swing the other way. I actually think that his first run was overrated, and his second run, when he came back from the back injury, was actually a lot better.
I'm not just to preface this. The phrase which I've already suddenly forgotten, the self-conscious epic. I'm not quite sure it means. It means what you think it means. Now, I think that this is kind of beside the point. But the self-conscious epic, which is Yeah, Shawn and Taker is epitomizes the concept. I only recently heard this term, but I think it does really fit that truly very well, because it's not really about having the best match on the card. I think the self-conscious epic is knowing that I'm going to do this big move and you're going to love it,
and you're going to dig out.
It in, and then you're going to kick out and everyone's going to go crazy. I think it's that kind of element of self-consciousness, and I lap that up because I'm very much I've said this before as well. I love the theatre of wrestling, I love the storytelling of wrestling, and it's we're in an era now where they can get away with doing that in a certain meta sense, and that really fascinates me. But as to Shawn Michaels, I think there's an argument to be made that could support what he says. But my problem is because he builds it on certain matches like the Shawn and Taker ones I personally love.
I think to echo Chase's point, he would have had more of a case if we were looking at the career as a whole and we were looking at pre-injury, because you could make the argument then if you wanted to talk strictly numbers.
Oh, yeah.
You wanted to talk strictly numbers, buy rates, live attendance, that sort of thing. There is a case to be made there, because HBK as the guy wasn't a great draw. No one around here is going to argue that. But post-back injury, considering we all thought we'd never see him in the ring again after 98... his body of work's been outstanding. You mentioned the Jericho Mysterio feud previously. His feud with Jericho is absolutely fantastic.
Yeah.
And you know, and how many months did that go again? And refresh my memory.
Went from April. It started in April because it was based around the Batista Michaels match, and it ended in October at No Mercy. They did last man standing match on Raw as well.
Around a 6 month period. And how many feuds go 6 months now?
Yeah.
They don't. His matches have been fantastic.
Post back injury, I mean, you just have to look at, you know, feuds with Kurt Angle or with John Cena, with Triple H.
The only thing I would say there is I do think the Triple H feud is overrated.
I think because the first match was fantastic.
First match is brilliant. That match at Armageddon.
Yeah, the Hell in a Cell match of Bad Blood that I made the joke last week, or 2 weeks ago, sorry, the court case is actually still going on. I think it went about 15 hours, that Hell in a Cell match of Bad Blood between the two of them.
There was one spot that always sticks in my mind. I think there was a pedigree, a kick out, and as he's picking him up, he goes straight into a super kick.
Yeah.
And it drives me mad.
Okay, I think that most of the case has been made for me already. I didn't really have to say all that much about Shawn Michaels. I do think the San Antonio match with Shawn against Triple H on Raw, I think, is really good as well. I'm not going to completely bury this pick by any means. I think I need to hear a more in-depth argument against Shawn if we're going to try and tackle the overrated issue. We're going to move along to the next of our picks for the most overrated element of professional wrestling, and we are going to bring in G. John Chase to the table because he has something he wants to discuss. What do you think's overrated?
I'm going to go a little different route here, and I'm actually going to pick a pay-per-view. And this specific pay-per-view will be a WrestleMania, and is one that is considered in quite high regard by many fans, and that is WrestleMania 6. In terms of like WWE, how they promote it, and also the general consensus by fans, is that this was one of the best Manias ever, or at least one of the most nostalgic and one of the most memorable Manias. I personally think that this is overrated. I had the great pleasure recently to actually watch WrestleMania 3 through to 10 back-to-back, and I can safely say that WrestleMania 6 was the worst show that I watched of that group. And this included WrestleMania 4 and 9, folks, okay? This was the worst one. Like, I felt like I was watching paint dry. I felt like I needed to go to the toilet just for some entertainment. It was just a putrid show. And it's mainly recognised for its main event with Ultimate Warrior and Hulk Hogan. And yeah, okay, it was a really good match considering the two people involved, who are both limited workers, both with their huge egos. It was amazing that I was actually able to put together a match that was relatively coherent and actually had like a good finish to it. But that
great finish.
Yeah, a great finish. But that was the only shining light. It was just like, and to say that that was like, you know, the best match on the card, that was between those two, just kind of shows how poor that card was, because the majority of them were so short. They were like so pointless. The longest match by far, and so it should be, was the main event. But like the fact that like the Hart Foundation take on the Bolsheviks in a 19-second match was just pathetic. I just couldn't stand watching the show, and I couldn't wait for it to end.
I think that not to criticise with this at all, because I would agree largely, I do think that you might be giving it too much credit in terms of what people's general opinions of the show. But I don't think people necessarily think it's one of the better ones. I do see your point in terms of nostalgia. People have they look at it with rose-tinted glasses because they remember the stuff fondly.
That's exactly the way you actually got the phrase that I forgot to say. It is through the rose-tinted glasses. I mean, how many times do they talk about that Ultimate Warrior match or the fact that WrestleMania 6 when we went to Toronto and they'll show Edge turn around to a talking head of Edge saying that he was there in attendance and that's what got me into wrestling. Just any time they do mention WrestleMania 6, they talk about it like, it was one of the best manias ever, and it really, really wasn't.
But not to belabor the point, but I'm going to do that anyway. Again, that's the company hammering that point home. I don't think that's the perception outside of the company. I don't even think, in truth, it's the perception within the company. There's a funny backstory to them almost never getting the money back across the border,
from Canada,
which is why they didn't go back to Canada for years for a pay-per-view. But there is a nostalgia around the main event. You're absolutely right in everything you say about the card. Generally speaking, it's a poor card, poor matches. But I don't actually think it's held in a particularly high regard, in truth.
I did a column on squaredcirclegazette.com at the end of last year. Actually, no, it was the start of this year, about the list of lists for WrestleMania. I kind of ranked in order how I thought the WrestleManias were. And WrestleMania 6 has to come fairly low when you grade the WrestleManias, because the things that the bulk of the matches, they fit into certain categories, which is matches that look like they could have been something that were disappointments, like Jake and DiBiase, like Piper and Bad News. These combinations that look on paper like they could be something more, and they all were just big letdowns. Randy Savage, after having a great WrestleMania stretch, gets stuck in there with Dusty Rhodes and Sweet Thafa. And it's nothing against Dusty. I'm sure as a one-on-one, maybe that would have meant more and probably would have been a lot better. Well, it would have been a lot better.
I mean, obviously, I'm going to be biased towards anything to do with Randy Savage, but I mean, that for me is a particular gripe that match was one made into a mixed tag match. Nothing against Sensational Sherry or Sapphire, but it's just like the fact that the guy who was main eventing the last WrestleMania was involved in a pretty much a secondary feud that was in the middle of the card, and Macho Man was one of their best performers at the time. And he's just in a match which is only about 8 minutes long, and he wasn't even the primary focus. To me, that's just like another reason why I just can't stand WrestleMania 6.
And on top of that, too, you mentioned that the Dusty Savage match. That even then, that was still the second biggest match on the card.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, and probably to the credit because of Macho Man Randy Savage and the fact that it did have a long build. But it's just like, but again, in comparison to the main event, which was given plenty of time, they were only given 8 minutes. I mean, there were other matches. The DiBiase, Jake the Snake was given more time. It was just, the whole booking, as Carl said, was just completely wrong.
All right, so looking at some more feedback here. The Brain Follower from Pro Wrestling Only. Overrated for me is Vader. He's great, but he's not as great as so many people make him out to be. Almost every WCW match I've seen has some minor awkward botch that no one seems to comment on and gives him a free pass.
First of all, you've written into the wrong podcast if you've been listening in on this. But you know what? Actually, getting to the end of that, there maybe is an argument that the whole botch argument, there might be something to that. I don't know. It is something that we never brought up in our conversation with
you. Just so everyone knows, if they listen to this for the first time, we did a show a few weeks ago about the best big man in wrestling history. Vader was the consensus pick from the write-ins. It was John Chase's pick. He was a consensus pick from the write-ins. And we talked about Vader at length. Botches never really came up.
No, but it never came up. Oh, you think about it. There is an element of... We actually said that we liked... I don't think we use the word, but almost the sloppiness. We liked that because it was part of that rough and ready, crazy aggression. But that did lead to a lot of those kind of mess up scrambles.
He was sloppy in the ring at times. But I mean, do you really think that makes him overrated?
Well, I'm not saying I necessarily agree with the premise of that, but I can understand why some people would look at it in that sense. If you like things to be crisp, but you don't want to be in a situation where other guys are actually just being hurt.
Yeah.
And Vader had that tendency to be roughshod with people and maybe a bit careless at times.
Okay, I'll go for that.
I can understand the perception.
I'll go for that. I think, yeah, like sloppy in terms of like boxes of moves and stuff, I think it's a little...
And it depends but I can visualise it. The ones he did screw up are very visually entertaining. There's a lot of good Vader gifts out there. But yeah, I mean, I think that's just a well-pointed argument that, if your values are in that direction, then yeah, I think maybe the argument can be made. I don't go with it personally, but yeah.
Okay, Kayfabe1984 from Pro Wrestling Only. I've always felt that the Snooker Morocco cage match from MSG is overrated. I watched it on a DVD once and I expected a lot going in since it was hyped so much. Granted, Snooker's dive was nuts, but the rest of the match I thought was lame. Speaking of Snooker, I never really saw what was so great about him in general.
Did people really hype the match, or is it the moment?
The dive.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, probably the most famous person who hypes that match is Mick Foley, because he obviously references it, the reason why he does professional wrestling, but I don't think at any moment he actually references the match. I think he does talk about the moment.
He actually does the exact opposite. He references the dive, and I don't think he actually uses the words, the match was poor.
And you said disappointing or something like that.
If you read his book, he doesn't speak highly of the match. He speaks very negatively.
Yeah, it's kind of a nothing match. Snooker in general, what do you think?
I was never really a fan. I never really saw what everyone saw in him.
If you judge Snooker by his second run in the WWF.
And I think that's the problem here again. We are in a situation where the period that where we grew up and we were watching it is his second run, where he's doing the job in a glorified squash to Taker at Mania 7.
Yeah. Okay, this is a funny one. Arrogantly grateful from Pro Wrestling Only, but personally, yeah, I'm not sure quite how this qualifies. In regards to overrated, for me, Kevin Nash is at the top of the list. I'm not going to go so far as to say overrated, because I think he's probably one of the more maligned people in wrestling in terms of his abilities.
He definitely falls into the maligned category, and to reference the earlier views I expressed on the underrated portion of this, he's one that the company, I think, puts more stock in than is deserved.
I actually interestingly enough, Liam, you actually made a good comment like a few days ago. We were watching the angle from Great American Bash 96 when the Outsiders, Hall and Nash, come out to deal with Bischoff, and it's the whole angle where, you know, Nash picks up Bischoff and powerbombs him. And I turned to you and I said, Jesus Christ, and he goes, Hall looks like a goddamn star there. He looks absolutely fantastic. And you made the point of, yeah, but if you actually listen to the audience, they're actually cheering.
They're chanting Diesel.
They're chanting Diesel. And for me, the fact that they were chanting Diesel over Hall, yeah, I'd agree that he's definitely overrated. when they're looking around, they're chanting for the guy who's, you know, all right, but, like, you know, completely ignoring Hall, who actually was a talent. Yeah, overrated.
Yeah, I think you could pick a moment in time and say he was certainly at one point in time overrated. I think people have come to their senses since then.
Yeah, I think the world has played itself out quite fairly here. Moving along, overrated. This is from Bad News Gertner at TPWW. Ricky Steamboat. Steamboat's matches are so overrated, and he was bland as fuck. Controversial point there, folks.
One of the greatest sellers in the history of the business. At a time when selling has become a lost art, go back and watch Ricky Steamboat's matches. Look how fantastic he is in those matches.
Carl is absolutely 100% right. He is, for me, he's the best seller I've ever seen. And I mean, like, yeah, saying about the quality of his matches, that's ridiculous. I mean, this guy constantly had good matches with anyone he was in the ring with. I mean, Jesus Christ, the cardio of the guy, like, the pace that he would go at is just absolutely phenomenal and so impressive.
I think he's pretty much consensusly viewed as very good, and I think that might be where he's trying to come with this, if he's got a personal... I've seen a number of criticisms that I personally wouldn't agree with that are more micro than macro when it comes to Steamboat, about how, even though he was put in the role of the epitome of a babyface, he was often booed by the vocal guys, especially in the Flair match, is a very common one. People might not necessarily like his offense, because it's all, you know, the chops and stuff like that. I'm not saying I agree with this, I'm just saying these are the criticisms that people can sometimes levy against Steamboat.
Yeah, I could appreciate the fact that he wasn't to everybody's taste, but I at no point do I think his ring style or his matches were overrated.
Okay, Bigelow 34 from Pro Wrestling Only. I still can't figure out why, but I've always felt Austin vs. Rock at WrestleMania 17 is overrated. It has nothing to do with the finish, it is just I always feel that something is lacking when I watch it and I don't know what it is.
No, I'm actually going to side with him on this. Again, I'm not saying that I don't like the 17 match. I thought it was very good. But for me personally, I don't think it was the best match those two had against one another.
Can I just ask quickly what you think their best match is then? Because personally for me, I think that is the best of their high-profile
matches. I completely respect that, and I understand why the majority of people do love that match, because obviously due to the setting and obviously the time period of 2001 when it was the height of the business. I can absolutely understand why people like it. Just for me personally, I actually preferred their third match at WrestleMania 19. Now, that might be because of the biasness, because I was a big Rock fan as well, and this was the one where the Rock, you know, dominated and won. I liked 15, I really liked 17, but for 19, for me, I just thought, just the poignancy of Rock winning, it being Austin's last match, I just thought there was just a little bit more to it. That's just my personal opinion.
I think 19, from my own personal opinion, felt like one stretch too far when it came to the series. I don't think that it really...
It was never for the title as well, which probably hindered it.
Yeah, and the fact that it was fourth from the top, third from the top. It wasn't like, if you're going to do Rock and Austin, it's third from the top. In addition, it's like, you know, the Austin thing was, you know, it was at its end. Rock, it felt like the actual series had run out of steam by that point to me personally. I do think that the 17 match is the peak of the matches they had together. It's just again, you want to talk about a match, you know, the self-conscious epic phrase that was used elsewhere, I think, for Shawn Michaels. I think that this is one of those matches that, even though it probably wasn't trying to be, kind of was actually designed to be, you know, the Rock kicks out of the stunner, the Rock kicks out of absolutely everything in the world, but they're actually doing it in the context of not just kicking out for the sake of it, but the Rock refuses to die, because they were trying to babyface him. I thought it was a real, and if you listen to the crowd too, the crowd's going absolutely ballistic in that match. I with the exception of the finish and the damage, the significant damage that to the WWF, Jesus, and the business in general.
I think there's a trial there.
Yeah, there certainly is,
God,
indeed.
There is, yeah.
So, moving on from WrestleMania 17, we are going to go over to Luke Edwards for his personal take on The Overrated. So, Luke, grace us with your dulcet tones once more, sir.
Why, thank you, sir. Well, here's where the magic of podcasting breaks down a little bit, folks. As we record this, it is in the past. Now, you know this, but it's a little further in the past than you might think. Because something is coming up as we record this. And I'm going to ask Liam. Liam.
Yo.
In the week that is coming, on the Raw that is coming next week, as we record this, a return is happening.
Yeah.
Are you excited for this return?
Yes, I am.
Why? That's my question. Because, ladies and gentlemen, next week, Brock Lesnar returns to Raw. Now, I am not going to stand here and say, you know who's overrated? Brock Lesnar. No, that's not fair and that's not right. And I don't think there's a good argument to be made for that. But Brock Lesnar's current run, which has, what, it's been over 2 years now.
Yeah.
Been over 2 years.
Two and a half.
And Liam, and possibly other people at the table. I asked Liam because I knew what he was going to say. but a lot of people are still excited that Lesnar's coming back, and I look at this 2 year run and I just don't have it left in me to care that Lesnar is coming back. I'm not saying that good things didn't happen in this run. Guys, off the top of your head, Liam, something great from this run. Lesnar, go.
Match with the Cena at Extreme Rules, match with the CM Punk.
Just one I'm passing around. Chase, give us something. What have you enjoyed?
Well, yeah, he's just named the two I was going to name, but his match with Cena and his match with Punk.
Can't you? Got one? Not just matches, anything.
On the purpose of not echoing those two, I'll say that it facilitated the prominent return of Paul Heyman as an on-screen character.
Two matches we keep bringing up in 2 years. Now, granted, he's been part-time, but there have been other matches. People tend to seem to forget that there were other matches. There were a lot of other things that involved fucking Mark Henry, okay? There were... And Mark Henry, I like. Don't get me wrong, I like Mark Henry. But that section didn't do anything for me. There were matches with Triple H. There was a... I just feel that after what we've had two good matches. You can say what you want about the Cena finish, and I will agree with whatever you say, frankly, about the Cena finish. No. The Punk match, I'm a big fan of that match overall. That was a good match, top to bottom. I like it a lot. The other stuff that I've sat through with Brock Lesnar, I'm just not excited anymore, and thus I say that this 2 year run of Brock Lesnar, and obviously it's only my only opinion, it's overrated.
Actually, because I'm just going to jump in before Liam gives his retort, because I think I'm actually going to side with you on this.
Shit.
I know, you instantly lost now, so yeah, I think I'm going to side with you. I mean, apart from those couple of notes that we gave, you know, with Punk and and Cena. Yeah, I mean, I was so hyped for Brock Lesnar when he first came back, and I was waiting for him to come back, because it was just, I remember that great run he had for, you know, 2 years that he was in the company, and I was looking forward for that Brock Lesnar to come back. That Brock Lesnar who the WWE had back in 2002 to 2004 didn't quite come back. It was a different type of Brock Lesnar. Not that I'm complaining about him. You know, the MMA Brock Lesnar was very good. But I think the two key points for me, which probably works in the favour of what Luke was saying, was that Triple H feud, which just, for me, didn't work. And it didn't help Brock Lesnar out at all.
Imagine that.
And, yeah, surprise, surprise. Well, he's in jail already, so it's okay.
And Ahmed for us.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. He's coming around shortly. But and I also think the Undertaker as well. I mean, well,
forgotten.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, the moment, the great moment of him beating, you know, the Undertaker was a, you know, water cooler, you know, heart stopping moment where you couldn't believe it. But I don't know. I think
that
Triple.
Was, do you mind if I just? Yeah. That was Snooker off the cage. People will talk about that moment at the end of the match.
Yeah.
But I was in a room with I think
all of us. All of us were in the room with you. Yeah,
we were all there. Yeah,
yeah.
Nobody was saying positive things about that match.
No.
It was just freaking. But I nearly missed the finish. Yeah. We were that bored.
Yeah. I actually, at that moment when we were watching that match, I actually turned to Liam. I was just, because I was actually wondering whether I'd taken something or what. Because I turned to like Liam and just saying like, is it just me or is this match like really bad? Like this is like there's like the crowd are dead and it just, there was something weird about it.
I would just say, in defense of Lesnar, when it comes to that match, he is dealing with a man who is, correct me if I'm wrong, north of 50.
Yeah, north
of 50. Absolutely. Wrestled once a year. It was clearly broken
down.
Got
concussed.
Absolutely. Got concussed. So there was a lot of factors working against Lesnar there. I think Lesnar's run since he's come back has been, I think he's been all over the map in truth. I think there's been some real peaks. And the low coming with the Triple H loss at Mania, which just really wasn't needed whatsoever.
No, that did so much damage.
No,
to
I will say I'm not a. I didn't like the fact they lost to Cena. I thought that was a hideous decision. I think that the fact that this run is even being discussed this way is in part due to the fact that he got his balls cut off immediately by being beaten by John Cena. At least the optimistic guy in me can say, at least deep down, if they genuinely believed that it was going to help John Cena, since he is still responsible for merchandise and buy rates and blah, 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 I don't like the decision in any way, but I can at least see why they might think that would be a good idea. I see no value in Triple H beating him at all, because Triple H isn't making really a difference. Well, Cena is making a difference.
I can see Cena beating Brock Lesnar, but not in their first
match.
Cena could have had like another match with him down the line, and he could have won that. They needed to build Brock up, and that was the problem. He lost to John Cena, and then he has this kind of like dodgy feud with Triple H where he wins one, loses one, whatever, and just like so by the time we got to Undertaker, it was not surprising that no one really gave a shit about it, because, you know, one, obviously no one thought he could actually beat Undertaker, but also just the fact that the run so far had been booked so badly for a guy that had such promise when he returned.
And let's not forget the fact that the entire series with the Undertaker on television was based around what exactly? Nothing.
Yeah.
There was a nothing feud.
There was nothing there.
Nobody will remember.
Yeah, they didn't even mention the deliberate angle that they ran several years earlier, where at a UFC event, Undertaker turns to Brock Lesnar and says, you want to do it then? Yeah, and like they didn't even mention it.
They didn't even mention the fact that Brock Lesnar plunger raped him in Hell in a Cell in 2002.
What a great visual! For the counterpoint, Liam, besides just your optimistic inner self, your inner child who loves Brock Lesnar, why are you excited for his return?
Being the guy that was in the crowd live the day Brock Lesnar returned and F5 John Cena kicked his hat, and it was awesome, you know? And yeah, it is maybe personal bias. But, again, the quality of the first match with Cena, I don't see anybody denying the quality of that match.
Oh, great match.
And we're going to get it again at SummerSlam. So, and considering the fact that, you know what, this has actually got a built-in story that could work, because Brock Lesnar, first of all, is pissed off and wants revenge because he got beaten in his first match. He's won the championship. I'm curious to see, after what happened at WrestleMania, what they're going to do to acknowledge the fact that this guy broke the streak. Will he be hotter now? That's what I'm curious to see in this landscape with what happened at WrestleMania. How's the world going to react to this Brock Lesnar?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, that's going to be an intriguing factor to see whether that whole, you know, ending a streak has actually worked to kind of, you know, reheat him.
Well, you folks listening to this, you know how that Raw turned out. Assuming you watch Raw. If you don't, this is a really weird podcast for you to be listening to, if I'm honest. And so I definitely post it up. I want to hear your opinions on this one. This interests me.
Yeah. Moving along, Mad Dog from Pro Wrestling Only. Luke, you're going to get some more voice time here. Lance Storm tops my overrated list. I don't care how many moves the guy knows or how crisp the execution is, the guy is a fucking bore. He has less charisma than the corpse of Giant Gonzalez, and his matches are never as good as they should be. I'm trying to think of a classic Lance Storm match, and nothing sticks out to me. Luke, as a man who was trained by Lance Storm, I would like your comments.
Yeah, this is clearly personal bias on my part, I suppose. I trained with Lance Storm. I got to know Lance. We got on really well. Here's the thing. Lance is a really freaking funny guy. He is a fantastically funny guy. And you know what it kind of links to? If you listen to the last podcast, one of the things I believe I mentioned was about Foley and about how he could handle a level of self-deprecation, yeah, and that kind of thing. And Lance has, I hope he won't hurt me for saying this, a very British sense of humour. He's got a very self-deprecating, very low-key sense of humour. And that is what his personality is based on. And I love it. He's hilarious. It doesn't translate to wrestling.
Yeah.
And I think it could. I think Foley has shown that in many ways it can. But I don't think you can be both self-deprecating and as freaking good as Lance is. I have worked Lance. I have wrestled Lance several times, dozens of literally over those weeks, and the guy is just amazing in every way. So essentially, fuck you.
Brilliant. Hey, that's personal bias. I will say that Paul Heyman recently mentioned on Jericho's podcast, he was talking about he did a podcast with Heyman and Edge. Heyman mentioned, who was the guy that all the guys in ECW wanted to work? It was always Lance Storm.
Yeah.
Jerry Lynn and Lance Storm had a very good series of matches in ECW. Whether you would consider them classics or not is a different issue.
I don't think I can better Luke's thoughts there, so I won't attempt to. But I don't think Lance Storm's overrated. I don't think he's underrated. I think he's another one to me that's held in the regard he should be.
Yeah, I think he's, yeah, you're exactly right. I think everyone knows what his limitations were, and as Luke was saying, he wasn't able to translate that personality when it came to his wrestling character. But my God, he was great in a ring. Whilst I don't know whether it was like the most amazing match in the world, Lance Storm did manage to make me watch a Tommy Dreamer match. As well, Lance Storm actually did have decent Tommy Dreamer matches.
Well, just as a counter to that, he says you can't name many classic Lance Storm matches. How many bad Lance Storm matches can he?
I think that's probably where the
touche.
And nobody's gonna ever say Lance Storm was one of the best of the best of the best of the best of the. He's not your Ric Flair. He's not your Harley Race.
He wasn't a main eventer, but Jesus Christ, he was a solid guy to have in your mid card.
And on that high note, we're going to go to the final one of the overrated choices from anybody around this table. We'll get to more of your feedback shortly. But for the overrated, I am going to go with The Undertaker. A guy who is very much lauded by the company and is held in quite high regard by a lot of people. I understand. Okay, this is the thing with The Undertaker. The vast, vast majority of his career to me was fairly mediocre. He did have good matches at times. There were exceptions to the rule. I think that The Undertaker, with the reputation of a guy who was a great worker, I think is overrated. Because I think when you look through history, The Undertaker was a guy who wrestled to the level of his opponent pretty much the entire way through his career. When he was stuck with crap, the matches sucked. When he was working with guys who were excellent, yeah, he did have good matches, very good matches. And when he had the platform of WrestleMania and all the pluses that go into the atmospherics, he did have a lot of good performances. But in terms of overall body of work, I mean, again, how much of his career was just stagnant stuff that either sucked ass or just didn't click?
My defense of Foley on the previous podcast, where I sort of tried to hammer home the point of his, he was, the way he was selfless.
Yeah.
And helped get guys over. A Taker to me is very much the reverse for significant parts of his career.
Yeah.
And it's partly the gimmick, especially in the early years. You can't be jobbing that gimmick out because it doesn't mean anything. But you go to 2001, and we've mentioned this before, he buried people left, right, and center in that invasion angle.
I think that entire American Badass run, he was getting really unbearable. And it was the fact that he was given the title in 2002 for that really grim couple of month period was just
That match with Triple H at King of the Ring.
Just tear the match with Hogan when he wins it.
Yeah, that
it's the wrong thing at the wrong time for The Undertaker. Again, just the fucking destruction of so many guys like DDP and, you know, refusing to job to Booker T and kicking out 2.5 on an episode of SmackDown because he didn't want to lose. Bringing his buddies Chronic in and then stinking up Unforgiven with that. There was just so much. Beating Rob Van Dam right after the invasion finished to, you know, sufficiently cut his legs off too.
Yeah.
There's so many instances where The Undertaker was detrimental to other guys' careers. And again, not to harp on one period and treat that like that's the big picture. When they brought back the Dead Man, it's Heidenreich feuds. It's the feuds against the Dudleys where Paul Bearer gets the concrete crypt treatment.
Yeah, I mean, I was
Booker T as the next generation Papa Shango is what they wanted to do.
I mean, I was someone for years who said, I thought, why can't he just be the Dead Man? Why can't they bring back the Dead Man? And then they brought him back, and I remember someone did a caption of him from Mania. Oh my God, it's The Undertaker. Oh, basically, at the end of the day, it's just Mark Calloway with a hat.
You know, wrestling Kane again.
Yeah, it was WrestleMania 20. He became the WWE's Malibu Stacy. And the Dead Man gimmick, when I sat there in the cold light today, and I've looked back now, and I think, what the hell was I thinking? What the hell did I want this incarnation back for? Where he doesn't job. I mean, wasn't one of the reasons Lesnar left was because they wanted to job him out to Taker?
Yeah, he was facing the loss in a casket match at the pay-per-view following WrestleMania 20 after they pushed Lesnar so strong for that time.
Yeah, I think with The Undertaker, I mean, he did have you know, some good periods, and I think particularly towards the end of his career, he kind of did quite a bit to try and fix his kind of legacy, I guess, if you want to call it that, you know, by having, you know, a lot of good matches with people. But as you said, he had way too many kind of dips in his career.
The thing is, how highly people rate him as a worker, maybe because that's been skewed, I would say, up until the Lesnar match. But I think what people rate him highly as is similar to what we said about Sting, as the kind of, as this icon, as a gimmick, as a thing that has been around, as a monument, that has just been around for that long. There is literally nothing to compare him to.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And I think that because he stands alone as this force that has been around forever, and my God, he's been through some shit, know? But then so did Hogan, you know? And he will still not be remembered for his matches. He will be remembered for one body slam. He'll be remembered for a few little moments.
Yeah.
Taker will be remembered for the same. And most of those moments will have Paul Bearer at his side, which will cheer me up. I'm such a Paul Bearer mark. So I claim he is rated as he is rated because there is no other way to rate him. He just is.
That's a pretty fair point. We're going to move along here from my pick. 669 from Pro Wrestling Only. This sounds like me trying to be contrarian, but I always felt Brett was overrated. Not that he wasn't any good, but the WWF was by and large not that great when he started to get the serious singles push, and it made him look 10 times better than he actually was. I don't know about this one. This is very. I understand the point about how, you know, the roster was suffering from depth issues in 93, 94, 95. I'll certainly go to that. I don't think that has much to do with the work of Brett.
I don't think that's a fair reflection on Brett at all. If you go through that period of time, Brett's work was great. He's got consistently good matches out of people that you wouldn't necessarily think he would mesh with.
Yeah.
Look at that match with Hakushi's a great match.
Hakushi was good then, man. Yeah, I dug Hakushi.
No, don't get me wrong. But you wouldn't think those two would mesh, would you? You wouldn't necessarily look at those two and think that's gonna work in the ring. But it did.
Yeah.
The good match with heel Doink. We've already talked about the feud with Owen on previous podcasts and how good those matches were. And then you look at his heel run. I know Brett's a mark for himself, and he called it, you know, shocker, and he called the NWO stuff garbage, and he thought the stuff that he was doing at the time in WWF was better. Now, I've watched those back in retrospect. I think he's absolutely right.
Yeah.
I think the Hart Foundation stuff in 97 is better than the NWO stuff by 97.
Your brain, not your heart, Carl. That's your problem.
The NWO stuff in 97 outside of the Sting build,
yeah,
is nothing to write home about.
Not to sneak in before Liam can move us on, but not to agree with the contrarian, but I think there are people who believe the same thing that Brett does. Besser is, Besser was, Besser ever will be. But as all-round performer, there are some people who put Brett at the top of the top, because I've met these people.
Yeah.
And that's just a slight step too far. And that I would say that that belief that Brett is the absolute pinnacle of what a wrestler, a sports entertainer, whatever you want to call it, can be, is simply, demonstrably, not the case.
Just to elaborate, because Sex69 was not the only person to say this fantastic from Pro Wrestling Only said, most overrated, Bret Hart, I've always viewed him as a solid, dependable guy that occasionally put on great matches, but wasn't near the standard of iconic greatness that some people apply to him. Facing facts, Owen Hart was a far better and more gifted athletically in-ring than Bret. It's just Bret had a degree of the goods, needed to be an all-round entertainer, and he happened to be in the right place at the right time.
Owen Hart was a fantastic wrestler, but I don't think he had the grasp of psychology that Brett did. Brett had to ground Owen for that feud, because Owen did want to pull out his high spots, and that's not going to work as a heel Owen Hart pulling off high spots. That isn't going
to
work.
Yeah.
So I don't think the psychology was there from Owen to the extent that Brett had it. And in defense of Brett, when we're talking about the pinnacle thing, to mention your
Please
point,
go.
Luke, Brett's even said himself, he doesn't consider himself a great promo guy by any stretch, does he? I think he said at his best he could maybe reach a 7 out of 10 on the scale.
Yeah.
But quite a lot in his early run, he was around a 2 out of 10.
Well, yeah, but at least there was improvement there. At least I think everyone can now recognise that, yeah, he was bad at first, but he did improve.
But that also runs on to Owen. I mean, Owen, there may be a loss in psychology there, but absolutely, as far as athleticism, also freaking promo abilities. Owen Hart was fantastic on the stick. He really was. Don't look at. Sorry.
I think he was good at portraying the character he was given, his kind of whiny younger brother.
But honest to God, I think I always said Owen Hart is underrated as far as promos and things are concerned. I'm just saying.
You got a big giant smile on your face,
Carl.
I'm
looking forward to this argument.
You're waiting to chime in here.
It's not so much chiming in. I think he could play the snivelling heel quite well, but I don't think his promos were particularly good. Ugh. And I can't.
How many can you remember? Because you can. Come on.
Yeah.
Owen Hart.
Yeah. Yeah.
Know.
I can.
One
I
more
can.
Can you
I go on. Quote.
I can remember. And the only one that I can remember.
Here we go.
Yeah, I'm convinced. Is the only reason you mentioned his promos. I'm absolutely convinced of that. Is because the only one that anyone can really remember is Rumble 94, and that's why I kicked your leg out from under your leg.
I owned that phrase. But, I mean, don't forget the Slammies. Don't forget everything he did with that character. And as I say, I mean, if you... He had an element of personality that I don't believe Brett could ever have learned, because he never did. And I believe that you can be taught psychology.
Owen was very good on commentary at the King of the Ring 1996. I'll give him that. I thought it was very, very funny on commentary.
Yes. Yeah, I completely forgot about that. That was very good. Especially his standing on the broadcast table as Bulldog. Bulldog, you're the best.
Okay. You're the best.
You see Brett doing that? You can remember a second one. Yeah.
No, because Brett's not going to call anyone else the best. I can clearly remember two Owen things.
Even better than that was when Gold's doing the mouth-to-mouth on Owen Johnson, and Owen Hart's rationalising it with it. See, what you're seeing here is perfectly acceptable CPR. It's perfectly standard.
Yeah. I love Owen.
I think probably with Owen Hart is that he probably had more range than Bret Hart did.
That's
what it is. We had more range.
Look at my range. Carl has literally just said that he has one set thing and no range.
Yeah.
But we'll go with
I think he just had more range, because Bret Hart, I mean, even when he did turn heel in 97, he was still pretty much Bret Hart. You know, he still, in essence, how he played it, he was still the same guy, as just he made it that the audience turned on him. So he didn't really change his character much.
We're in an era of characters now, and Bret didn't really have a character. Bret was just Brett, surely, for most of it. It was just different, slight takes on Brett, but it was just Brett.
Yeah.
And that made it work. He made it work for him.
That's what I mean. Mark, that's a strike against him. I thought the fact that he was the promo he was in 97 helped make that what it was.
I guess.
El Bariqua from Pro Wrestling Only. For overrated, I'll go ahead and say it. Ric Flair, post-1990.
How can you hate crazy Ric Flair in the 90s? That early 90s era. For some reason, I just find it strangely entertaining.
Ric Flair, it did get quite sad near the end of the 90s, I'm not going to lie. The whole Ric Flair definitely. In WCW.
You remember thinking Ric Flair looked old in the 90s?
Yeah, fucking hell.
Just saying, this is something that struck me recently. It's like, wow, Ric Flair looked old in the 90s then, but my God, the man is like a bloated corpse now in so many ways.
It's really weird because actually when he came into the WWF back in 2001, right, he still looked like Ric Flair.
That's it.
Like in the 90s. Mm. And then suddenly, like almost out of nowhere, sometime during 2002, 2003, his face melted.
Wait a second.
Right around the time of Evolution,
Did they
not?
Maybe they replaced him. Maybe this whole time it's somebody with a cheap Ric Flair mask.
Do you think they put his mom in instead?
His face just melted.
He doesn't look like his hair disappeared.
That's
overnight.
Why he couldn't do the thing over the corners anymore.
No, he couldn't.
Mm.
We're through the looking glass here, people.
Behind the curtain.
Ric Flair still had good moments post 1990, though. I mean, the Royal Rumble in 92, the match with Savage at WrestleMania. Flair had good moments. Isolated moments, as they may be compared.
It's probably a debatable one, but I think you can make the case that the 92 Rumble match is the best Rumble match in history,
considered the case, to be quite honest.
I would hope so, and the people who think that are right, in my opinion. I think from 99 onwards, Ric Flair could have done absolutely nothing, and I would have been content with that. There is very little, if anything at all, I like about his WWF run from 2001 up to the present day.
Mm, interesting. Tim Evans from Pro Wrestling Only says Mitsuharu Misawa. He was real good, but I like him less than Kobashi and Kawada. I haven't seen much Taui, but from what I've seen of him, I like him more than Misawa. I should say that the Old Japan style is right up there with Shoot style as the style I like the least.
Well, yeah, that just sounds like just a personal preference, which is fair enough. Of those four guys that he mentioned, if he just thinks that Misawa was the least of his favourites, that's absolutely fair enough. But to state that, it's just personal preference. I myself, of those four names, I don't think Misawa was the best, but, you know, at no point would I ever call him overrated.
I think the stylistic points sort of tie into a little bit about our earlier discussion about Vader.
Yes.
Where if you don't like the stiffness and the possibly perceived sloppiness sometimes, it can be a turn-off for some people. It's not particularly my favourite style of wrestling because I don't like this notion of... There's a difference between working stiff and being careless.
Yeah.
And to me, a lot of All Japan is careless, and I find it uncomfortable to watch.
And given the fate of Mitsuharu Misawa, I think that pretty much plays into it. Yeah.
Well, that's fair enough, but he wasn't the only one that ever did that style. I mean, the other names that he mentioned, you know, Kobashi and Kawada, they also did that style as well, that stiff style. So I don't quite see why his objection is to Misawa over those two guys.
Well, we got another more controversial one here from Bill Thompson. Overrated Paul Heyman. As both a promoter and an on-air talent, everybody's bowing up to the microphones now. Not only did ECW do terrible business, but I find so much of their product and his booking decisions horrendous. As an on-air talent, he can talk, but how often does he really help his charges? He did back with the Alliance, I'll give him that. But modern Heyman isn't really needed for Brock, and he did nothing at all to help Axel or Cesaro.
I don't blame Paul Heyman for Axel in the slightest. I just think Axel was a disappointment, which is heartbreaking for me to say, because I was hoping for big things for him.
I personally don't blame him for Cesaro either.
Heyman, I've mentioned Jerry Lawler, go back and compare his commentary to Lawler's. Tell me Paul Heyman's not a million times better than Jerry Lawler
on commentary.
Of
course, yeah.
Not as good a wrestler in Memphis, though.
No, absolutely not, because we've all seen his Memphis stuff.
Exactly.
Well, Liam has, but I don't know about most of the outside world. But
I'll go back to my cave.
No, we like it out here with the rest of us. But the ECW stuff, I've got my own gripes about ECW and some of the romanticism of it all.
Yeah, Kieran O'Rourke, who's not on the show today, he feels very similar about ECW and his own personal quest to myth bust how good ECW really was.
But tell me honestly that they think Vince McMahon could have got as much out of that ECW roster and the talent that Heyman did. Tell me if Bischoff can do it, because I think the answer is no.
Neither one of them would have gone anywhere near that roster, and that's what makes Heyman special and different from Vince McMahon or Eric Bischoff. I'm sorry to the gentleman who wrote in, but I completely disagree with everything he wrote there. To say that
but he's sorry.
I'm sorry. I disagree with you. But the reason why he's been put with Brock Lesnar is, have you heard Brock Lesnar talk? And goes, the guy, when he's talking, it constantly sounds like he's about to start puberty. It's just like his voice keeps breaking every now and again. So and he doesn't sound like he's the most intelligent person in the world. And I do like Brock Lesnar, but he doesn't sound the most intelligent person in the world.
That's because he's from rural Minnesota.
Paul Heyman is great at promoting people. I mean, it's like also why they put him with Punk. Like, Punk can talk for himself; he knows how to. But Punk was just there as that added garnish to just solidify that heel turn that they gave him.
The Heenan Bockwinkel comparison is completely fair there.
To say that he was overrated as a talker, I don't think, no, not at all. I think he's absolutely underrated as to what he was able to achieve with certain people, in particular the ECW roster.
And in terms of business for ECW, I will say this, it was never a profitable company, but at the same time, given the amounts of money that were being lost elsewhere by WCW, the fact that ECW was able to thrive and hang on as long as it did in the environment it was in with you know, the two big companies trying to, you know, take their talent that was getting over and had potential with big money contracts, ECW trying to survive, trying to grow, and in the end they were only $7 million in the hole, and 4.5 it was Paul Heyman's own family.
Yeah, well, I was just sort of going to echo your point there. As you say, by the end of its run it was only $7 million in the red. Compare that with WCW's well-publicised losses in 99, 2000, basically any period before 95, in truth, or 94 when Hogan comes in, sorry. Look at their losses throughout their entire run as WCW. They dwarf ECW's. Jerry Jarrett's TNA experiment, how much did that lose in less than 2 years?
Significant amount
of
money.
More than double the $7 million that ECW lost.
In 4 months.
Yeah.
I know they've lost significantly more since too.
Paul Heyman, when it came to running ECW, was a great kind of like wheeler dealer kind of guy. You know, he was able to talk a lot of bullshit, which is up to, you know, he'll admit that himself. He was able to talk a lot of bullshit, and that's because he's one of the greatest talkers of all time.
And everything that I wanted to say has been covered by everyone around this table, and I think most people listening already had every piece of that information in their heads and was, for all intents and purposes, singing along. That that person who wrote in is truly alone in the world.
Oh, wow.
USA1 from Wrestling Forum says, WrestleMania 17 always gets praised as the greatest mania ever, but there's no real defining moment of the show for me. It doesn't have that WrestleMania moment like Rock vs. Hogan, Benoit and Eddie at MSG, the ladder match from 10, Hogan slamming Andre, Austin and Tyson, the Austin bloody face, HBK winning at 12. What is WrestleMania 17's defining moment? Austin turning heel? That wasn't a big moment at all in the history of wrestling.
I'm sorry.
I disagree and say it was, but for all the wrong reasons.
Your mic cut out there. You said something about MSG, but nothing came through the microphone. Do you want to say it again?
Oh, I see. Yeah, sorry. I'm with you now.
Okay, so it may not have the nice, memorable moment that everyone looks back on wistfully, because people don't like the heel turn. But to your point, it was historic, just not for the right reasons. Which mania is better as a overall card, though, than 17? So just an open question to
pose. Do any
jump out? There may be one, but do any instantly jump out?
Like I said, when I wrote the WrestleMania list of lists for SquaredCircleGazette.com, WrestleMania 17 was at the top.
I'm just to be the controversial guy, I, to an extent, agree with the statement that the gentleman made, in terms of, like, in its key point of something being overrated. I think 17 is a very good show, a fantastic show, but I do think, for me personally, it's held in little too high a praise, just for me personally. Now, you were asking about, like, what were there any shows that were better. Again, that's a kind of very kind of, like, a personal kind of, like, preference. For me, I preferred shows like 14 and 19 for various different reasons. I could probably concede that 17 from a match by match basis was very good, but I think just the fact there is slightly rose tinted glasses with 17, and I can understand why, you know, because it was the peak of the industry, you know, and you know the match that everybody loves, you know, the Rock Austin match, which we've already gone into before. Just for me, I can understand where he's coming from, where I think, not saying that it's bad, but I can understand where it's just a little too overrated, where everyone just says it's the best thing ever, and I think there are better shows.
See, I think 19's a good show that suffers in retrospect because of the buy rate.
Yeah.
I don't actually think 14's that good a show, personally. I think it's remembered fondly because Austin gets the belt for the first time.
I like 14 because it's a very good place in time of you can sense the business shifting and watching it's like...
You've
watching
got
it at the time, I can see the case for 14.
I think there's this notion of iconic moments.
Quite frankly,
I mean, Mania 20, right? I've got this is one that sticks in my craw. Not because it's Benoit or anything like that, or all the unpleasantness that followed. I actually think that is an overrated show. I think if you take that show out of Madison Square Garden and insert whatever different number other than 20 you want, I don't think that's looked back on as fondly as a show.
That's absolutely fair enough. But I think the point of, like, you know, iconic moments, I think, is fair enough, actually. I think that's a very decent argument, because isn't that what WrestleMania's been promoted as? It's like, that's where all the iconic moments happen.
Okay,
it's fair enough. But it's how, like, they promote it, and, like, everyone's always kind of waiting for that, like, kind of big moment at WrestleMania. The only real memorable moment for me, the Austin heel turn, which, as stated, was rememberable for the completely wrong reasons.
Larry Atto from Wrestling Forum: I believe that the Kurt Angle Shawn Michaels WrestleMania match is so overrated it's comical. I think because of the two names involved and the stage it was on, it gives people some sort of rose coloured glasses, there's that phrase again, to look to it. The match is a headlock bore fest. They really didn't have any chemistry in this match. Their later encounters were much better. I disagree wholeheartedly here.
Again, it's looking at perspectives here, and I can almost understand what he's talking about, because I always remember that match when I saw it live as being absolutely fantastic, and then when I watched it again recently, it's still very good, but it wasn't as great as I remembered.
It's funny, because this is one of those matches that I... historically speaking, the company doesn't really talk about this match at all, probably because it's got Kurt Angle in it, to be perfectly honest. It doesn't get bigged up as this all-time classic match. I think it's just that, you know, fans, you know, whether it's online fans or whatever, really do like that match. And I disagree with the Headlock Boar Fest. It's a match that's... They're laying the groundwork at first, you know, they're pacing themselves, they're getting into it. When you listen to the way the crowd is at the very end of the match, they've built them upon a crescendo, they're going up and down, up and down, up and down, and they're absolutely at a fever pitch when Shawn Michaels is he going to tap out? The crowd's going crazy. When he finally taps, it works. They're going to go, if that match goes, you know, 25, 30 minutes, which it did, you got to, and you're going to hope to have a finish that tense. You need to build it up like that.
Yeah, you gotta lay the groundwork. You can't go balls to the wall for half an hour.
And it's not like
you're just gonna burn the crowd out.
And they weren't sitting in the same headlock. They were moving around and getting in and out of it. And it was the frustration of Angle can't get out of this damn headlock.
I think you can make the point that they may have had better matches. That's it's a subjective comment. But yeah, I don't know where he's coming from with this headlock boar fest at all.
We have one last suggestion for overrated. Winter Decay from TPWW Forum says that overrated is the NWO.
I think we could have an individual podcast on the NWO.
Yeah.
To be in the interest of brevity, I will say I think there are some very reasonable points to be made about the NWO. In terms of being overrated, once you get to that Starrcade 97, which we've alluded to previously.
The problem really is that those three letters, NWO, refer to so very much.
Yeah.
And so very much of it is crap. I mean, really? You break that down because it happened on Nitro and Thunder, so...
Yeah. The thing is, though, when you look at that, when you mention the crap, I cannot understate this enough. As much as Steam was... building for WCW and the WWF in 1995 and 96, the NWO changed the business completely. Definitely. into and again, it was part of a big picture.
Did they ever say sorry for that?
No.
It was to use the Tully Blanchard analogy, the NWO was the blasting cap.
Yeah, they were the blasting cap. They helped WCW get hot, which in turn helped so many stars on their side get even hotter.
Yeah.
It also led to the WWF getting back up and wrestling in general being red hot.
But I also think, like, that was an angle that should have been obviously considerably shorter than it actually was. It was a very kind of small time scale that NWO angle should have actually ran for. And I think that the part of it being actually kind of overrated is probably by the people in the industry themselves, is because that initial period where NWO, as you said, did draw in figures and did draw in buy rates, they suddenly thought that NWO, those three letters, was, man, that's going to put bums in seats and raise the pay-per-view. So suddenly they started using the angle for a lot longer than it naturally should have. They bought it back again in 2000.
Oh, that's terrible.
WWF bought it back again in 2002.
That was even worse.
Yeah, they just kept bringing it back because they thought NWO equaled money, when it was like, it did. But for the very beginning, when it first started, that short time period.
There's always a shelf life for any angle, star, whatever it is. And the NWO, once it exhausted it, they went to the well.
Yeah, that's where I think the overrated comes in, is that it's people within the industry that think that NWO still actually is profitable.
Well, I think we talk about shelf life. The shelf life for the NWO was around 18 months.
Yeah, I think I agree completely. We have stretched the gamut, ladies and gentlemen. Over the course of the last 3 hours, we've gone over the underrated and the overrated over the course of two podcasts. We very much appreciate all of your feedback and all the comments that you've left with us. For G. John Chase,
I still hate Hardcore Holly.
For Carl Jones,
regardless of what I say about you, I do still love the emailers.
And for Luke Edwards,
do we get to hit the porno music now?
I am Liam O'Rourke. Thank you very much for joining us on this odyssey of the last two podcasts. We are out of here at last. Cue the music.